Blog Talk Radio.
I want to present to some and introduce to others your host for Anything But Ordinary Radio, Mr. Michael McCleary.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Anything But Ordinary Radio. I am your host, Michael McCleary, as Chris Kloss just introduced me. So excited to have you with us tonight. We have two really great guests, as we do every week. I mean, we have lots of great guests every week. But again, two exceptional guests. We are blessed to have the people that we have, the quality of guests that we have every week to come to you and share with you just some really exciting, inspirational chat and to really inspire you to make those changes in your life, to go forward with those things that you're passionate about, the drives, the beliefs, the things that you want to do, the changes you want to make in your life, in your organization, your business, or in your community. What is it that you want to do? Where do you want to go? And tonight we're going to be really talking about that. Initiating extraordinary change is our topic tonight. And I'm excited to have with us two amazing individuals. David McGee, Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Greater Flint, is going to be with us here at the top half of the hour. I can tell you from being at the TEDx Flint event a few weeks ago, where I got an opportunity to meet David and also hear him speak and present, a real powerful speaker, has a lot of things to share with us, and I'm excited to have him with us the first half of the hour. And in the second half of the hour, we have Peter Bregman, who runs his own consulting and leadership development company. He's also a writer for the Harvard Business Review. Also had an opportunity to see him at TEDx Flint as well. And he's from New York City. Again, really powerful information on change and initiating change from Peter in the second half of the hour. And I really want to get a shout out to Kevin Simpson, who was with us last week. He really helped to bring together not only the TEDx Flint event that we've been kind of covering the last 2 weeks, but also these amazing speakers and helping line them up for me on the show. So, Kevin, thank you again. I know you're listening in right now, probably from overseas, either live or online or in the archives. Later, but Kevin, thanks again for this. And without further ado, too, I'd like to introduce our amazing co-host who was not with us last week, but I'm so excited that she's back again, Maria DiGiovanni. Maria, how are you tonight?
How are you, Michael? I'm so excited about being back. I missed it last week, and after being gone a month in Greece, I, you know, have to come back and get my fix. So I'm happy to be back.
Well, we are glad to have you back. And I really want a real quick shout-out, too, to our guests who are listening in and also in the chat room. Just to let you know, if you are a guest in the chat room or if you haven't clicked on chat, I mean, one thing to do if you're listening in, you're like, I'm not in the chat room. There's a little chat icon that you can join in and talk with us in the chat room. But you have to be a Blog Talk Radio member. You have to have a Blog Talk Radio account in order to talk in the chat room. You can see what's going on and what's going up in there, What's going on in there? Well, yeah, people are posting up in there. But if you want to post, if you want to ask a question of any of our guests, you just have to sign up for an account. It's free. It takes like 30 seconds. And you can log back in as whatever your username you set up. But otherwise, just want to let you know, because some people get a little frustrated. They get in a chat room and go, I wasn't able to post. You know, what happened? And it's because they weren't logged in as a user. So I just wanted to let all of you know that. And Maria, sorry for cutting in there, but I saw our chat room was getting busy. I mean, we've got some great people in there. We've got Jed Ray's joining us in there. We've got Mr. Michael McFadden is in there right now. So come in, join us, and have a lot of fun. Maria, sorry. your thoughts before we get to David about initiating extraordinary change. Any thoughts that come to your mind or that you really think our listeners should take a listen to?
I think right now everybody's kind of in a change mode, especially since last week, and everybody is itching for a change, and I obviously just changed, moved, and so I'm excited about this week's guests, and I'm looking forward to hearing what David has to say, and especially being involved in what he's involved in. I would love to get his perspective and what kind of man does this for a living. So let's get to interviewing him.
Well, all right, let's get to David. Quick introduction, Mr. David McGee. He's been employed with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Greater Flint since November 2005, and since June 2006, he's made the transition from case manager to the project coordinator of the 100 Men, 100 Boys Group Mentoring Program. And I want to ask him about this. This is something we're going to talk about a little bit during this interview. But he leads the organization's efforts to provide a mentoring experience to unmatched boys awaiting a Big Brother. And prior to becoming a staff member, I'm just talking too fast and I'm too excited about what we've got on. before he became a staff member, he was a mentor, and he earned the honor of Big Brother of the Year in 2001. He also serves on the Board of Trustees for the Flint Public Library. He's very active in the Flint community. And I love one quote that he talks about that serves as an affirmation to his life, and it says, "If I have learned anything, I've learned that our background and circumstances may have influenced who we are, but we are responsible for whom we become." David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
David, if you would, tell us a little bit about how you got involved with Big Brothers Big Sisters, because you were there as a mentor first, and you became a staff member. What not only drew you to the organization, but brought you into the fold to actually create a career with this organization?
Okay, in life, things happen one or two ways, by choice or by force. My first involvement with Big Brothers Big Sisters, by way of being a mentor, actually took place when I was in high school. So it came by force, where it was one of those days where I got home from school and it was what my mother told me that I was going to do. She said, you're going to sign up to be a big brother at Big Brothers Big Sisters. And, you know, when you're an adolescent age, you really don't have many chances to make choices. So that's what I had to do. And lo and behold, once I got involved, it was a phenomenal experience and never looked back since then. So my first involvement as a mentor came by way of my mother's experience, her serving as a mentor as well.
I got a question. Mm-hmm. What was it that inspired you as something your mother wanted you to do, but what inspired you once you got involved with it?
Oh, and that's a good question. Once I got involved, what inspired me was just having an opportunity to be a voice for the voiceless, if you will, the platform. Big Brothers and Big Sisters across the country, we service children primarily from single-parent families. All of the children in the agency's programming don't come from single-parent families, but the majority of them do. So with the benefit and the blessing I had being reared in a two-parent household, I was in turn given the charge to kind of provide a platform for a young man who wasn't afforded the same opportunities that I was afforded.
You know, growing up in Flint, living in Flint, working in Flint with Big Brothers Big Sisters, you know, one of our cities in America, and Michigan in general, I mean, Michigan, we've really been hit by the recession, but even before the recession, I went to school in Flint at Kettering University. I owned a home in Flint for a number of years there. And so I really consider myself, you know, a part of Flint. I love Flint. I mean, I think Flint gets a really bad rap a lot of times around the country for the issues that are there. But there, you know, there's a lot of issues, too. In the town. You know, what is it like working with them? Because you have a lot of young men that you have to work with, that you're working with, that don't have that support. They don't have that parental influence. What is it like for people who are on the outside, you know, that just don't see this every day?
Well, that's a good question as well. And the thing I would like to equate it to is most people look at that population of individuals, and I'm talking about individuals in poverty situations, if you will, because a lot of us equate poverty with financial resources, but poverty doesn't stop there. poverty spreads into not only lack of financial resources, but lack of spiritual resources, right? Lack of relational resources and things like that. So individuals from on the outside looking in look at working with this population of people as a chance, like taking a chance. But it's not taking a chance. It's more so a responsibility to your community. I mean, as good citizens, we have to ask ourselves, how will we make this world a better place since we were born, right? So it's just pretty much seeing it as a responsibility and paying it forward.
You know, how can people get involved, and why is it important for people to get involved? Because I think you see, you know, maybe a lot of people that are they're busy with their jobs, they're busy with their careers, and they go, you know, it would be great for me to be involved, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, to be a Big Brother, to be a Big Sister, but you know, I've got all these things going on, I don't have the time. Why should those people who know they should give back, but they've got all the excuses, you know, what do you tell them? Why they should get involved with these with young people to make a difference?
Well, statistics show that if 20%, now hear me clearly, only 20%, if 20% of communities volunteer their time, then communities would be sustained. So I'm going to say that again. If 20% of individuals residing in any community, not only in Flint and Genesee County, but in any community, if 20% volunteered their time, their community would be sustained. So, I mean, to answer the bigger question, how can you find time to volunteer with an organization such as Big Brothers Big Sisters? Simple math. It's 52 hours a year. 52 hours a year, which equates to an hour a week. We all have 52 hours a year. 52 hours a year, and it's not a matter of, okay, finding time. It's just a matter of including the young person into your everyday activities. As an example, me and my little brother, if I have to go to the barbershop and get a haircut, I can take my little brother with me to go and get a haircut. So it's a service. I mean, it's a great duty, and it's twofold. And the volunteer understands that while you're changing the life of a young person, you're being changed as well.
Maria, do you have I don't want to dominate this. Do you have a question?
I know quite a few people that are involved, and it changes their life because exactly what you just said. You give back to the young person, but they're actually feeding into your soul. What kind of programs do you give to your mentors to prepare them for them to give back to their mentee?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, it's really twofold. One fold of it is just equipping them, empowering them with the tools they need to be successful in the structured relationship that Big Brothers Big Sisters provide. The other 50%, quite frankly, is the tools and the skills that they already bring into the relationship. I mean, one thing that us as adults have over the younger generation is wisdom. It's wisdom. I mean, we just have that by nature of living. And there's a difference between growing old and growing up. So while our young people are growing old, the mentorship can make sure that they grow up. So we do provide training and support throughout the relationship, throughout the entire mentor relationship.
David, I want to talk to you about change in a minute, because we want to get to that. But I have a question from the chat room that I want to get in, especially because we're still on the topic of Big Brothers, Big Sisters. And that's, David, I was truly sheltered in my life and didn't see such a program as I was growing up. How do you introduce this to someone who has not experienced such issues?
Say that question again. They were truly sheltered and they didn't.
They were sheltered and they never really experienced, you know, a program like Big Brothers, Big Sisters growing up. So for someone who hasn't had issues where, you know, they didn't have a parent around, they didn't have, you know, some societal issues where they grew up, how do you introduce this program to someone who just hasn't experienced, not having a mentor, you know, and they're kind of confused. Okay, how do I be a mentor? If I always had a mentor. I don't know what it's like, you know, what this kid's going through. I haven't had these experiences. How do you introduce someone to that?
Thank them. First and foremost for that question, because I think the first step is them asking the question. Because, I mean, so often we travel throughout our lives and we see issues, we see problems, but we never take time to inquire about those things. So it's really a matter of where we are in our life and knowing what we have to offer. So if they've never experienced those things, they've seen how the lack of those experiences have shaped their lives, if you will. So they can just kind of equate that to a young person who may not have been afforded the same experiences and opportunities that they had, and just pretty much giving them the platform so they can rise to the next level. And even if the young person does share those experiences, I mean, if the person asking the question hasn't had those experiences, in many ways we have so many support systems in our lives. But then in hindsight is always 20/20. When we look back, we say, wow, even though I had mom and dad, I wish I would have did this differently. I wish I would have took advantage of that opportunity and things like that. I mean, I was blessed to have both parents in the home, and it's several opportunities that I truly didn't take advantage of when I was a young person, but just truly tell themselves, by me volunteering my time, I'm changing the world. So it's bigger than them. It's bigger than the volunteer. It's bigger than the mentee. You have an opportunity to truly change the world.
Great answer, David. In fact, you got the same thing in the chat room. You got a well said on that. And getting to our topic, which is initiating extraordinary change. You know, we've talked about your involvement in Big Brothers, Big Sisters, in the community. You deal with change on a daily basis. You deal with kids that need, you know, that you're trying to make a change in their life. You're trying to improve their life, give them a different outlook, show them that really their dreams are possible to come true, even when they're in some of the worst environments you can be in. So you're dealing with that daily, but also with your the programs that you do, the presentations you do, you know, you really talk about this issue. So what are some things that you've learned that you can share with our audience about making a change and really creating it and making it stick?
The simple answer to that is filling the void. There are voids in life each and every day, and we're all familiar with the quote that goes, necessity is the mother of invention, right? So just pretty much filling the void and asking ourselves the question that Bill Clinton wants to ask himself: what can I do that won't be done if I don't do it? What can I do that won't be done if I don't do it? So if there's a void, I mean, if there's a community void by way of volunteering, how can I fill that void? If there's a void in health disparities and things like that, in community health, in public health, in individuals' communities, what is the void? How can I fill that void? Because we all can play a critical role in changing the way that people grow up in America. Not only changing the way children grow up in America, but we truly can change the scope of how individuals grow up in America. And once we tell ourselves that it's bigger than us, then I think we're taking the first step in making that extraordinary change that you're talking about.
I couldn't have said that any better myself. Again, to the audience, you know, you're listening to Anything But Ordinary Radio. We're interviewing David McGee right now. And you can find us here every week, Tuesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. And you can also visit our archives. You can listen to the show again later on. You can listen to all of our shows later on, anytime, 24/7. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/anythingbutordinary. And again, like I said, I'm always blessed and I'm amazed by the guests that we have on. In fact, my friend Michael McFadden from Atlanta just pointed out in the chat room, he said he's on point, and I can't say that any more. I mean, that was a great way to touch about making a change. Maria, do you have something that you want to ask?
I do. David, why don't you give me one quick story that you can share with our audience of an experience that you've had with your little brother?
An experience with my current little brother. How can I put it? It's a teachable moment, if I can call it anything. It's a teachable moment. And my little brother, my current little brother, he loves Chuck E. Cheese. He loves Chuck E. Cheese to the point where I had to ban Chuck E. Cheese for a series of months that we met. But there were two consecutive times that we went to Chuck E. Cheese. And the first time, he won a lot of tickets, played a lot of games, won a lot of tickets. And we went concession stand. We went to the stand, and he turned in his tickets, retrieved his gifts, and then we went on our way. The next time we went to Chuck E. Cheese, I realized that it was only about 3 or 4 weeks had passed, and same thing, played his games, won a lot of tickets. So I kind of pulled him to the side and whispered to him and nicely told him, we're gonna give these tickets away to somebody else. All right, we were just here a couple of weeks ago. You had a lot of, you know, you had a lot of fun. You got some gifts. We're gonna give these tickets to somebody else. And I saw the look on his face, and he thought I was just playing. So I let him finish playing. And then right when we were getting ready to leave, I said, now it's up to you. You can pick who we give the tickets to. He said, well, I don't know these people. I said, I don't care. It really doesn't matter. Just find somebody in here to pick who to give the tickets to. So with one tear in one of his eyes and, you know, the hard steps that children take when they are forced to do something, so he's stomping through the place, and he approached the young girl and said, hey, excuse me, you can have these tickets. And he gave her the tickets, and he walked out. We walked out. We got in the car. I said, so don't you feel good about that? And I'll never forget these words. He said, yeah, but not really. I said, rephrase that because that doesn't make sense. He said, yeah, but not really, because I could have gave her half the tickets and I could have kept the other half because I'm good at dividing. And that in and of itself was a teachable moment, because even in his misfortune, he still equated that to an academic moment, to where, okay, she still could have got something. So he's playing economics here. She could have got something and I could have got something and we could have been all good. But now, from that teachable moment, every time we go to Chuck E. Cheese, it's a game to him. It's a game to win as many tickets as he can and then find somebody to give the tickets to, because he now understands that with the value of him having a mentor, and it's nothing to do with me personally, but the value of him having a mentor, he may have somebody in his life that the other individuals don't have. So not only can you pay it forward, but you can change the whole scope of somebody's day by just doing something nice for them. Those are the teachable moments that we experience.
And that is what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. That is, you know, and I think it's a great, I mean, that's just a, that's a great point, because here, you know, here you are, and this is a perfect example of whether it's big brothers, big sisters, or mentoring someone else, or working with other people, helping other people out, volunteering, you know, just that little idea you gave him to say, you know, look, we're going to give away these tickets. Like you said, now it's a game for him, and he's mm-hmm. looking forward to doing it. You know, that's something that's going to last throughout the rest of his life. If you hadn't been involved in his life, he may never have learned that. I mean, that's, and who knows where he will go just because of that little thing that, well, it's a big thing, but, you know, in the space of time, you know, this idea, this great lesson that you gave him. Thanks, Michael McFadden. Sorry, I'm cheating in the chat room. Michael just popped that up. Great lesson. You know, that's the importance. And this is a great thing when we talk about change, you know. It's sharing those lessons. It's sharing those ideas. These little things that we do that may seem very small can turn into massive, massive change.
Yeah, we have to create those opportunities, especially for our young people. We have to create spaces for them to be successful. Like, we have to create that as adults. That should be our charge, to create that space. A good friend of mine, we were actually having a conversation with it either yesterday or the day before. Yesterday, actually. He said, so often in life, we don't give young people space to make choices or to be successful, and then we just wait till they turn 18 and 19 and they make that one choice, that one mistake, and then we want to lock them up. Well, during their adolescent years, those were the times where we could have created those spaces for them to fall and bump their heads, for them to fall and chip their tooth and get a bloody nose, but not only that, just to elevate them and empower them. So we have to create that space, and if we don't, as American citizens, we will, and I don't mean to sound harsh, but we will pay the price for not doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're already paying. I mean, you just look around right now, you know, the number of people who are incarcerated, you know, especially Black Americans that are incarcerated,
mm-hmm.
we are paying the price for that. We all are, collectively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times people want to associate it with, you know, the African American community, but it's not just the African American community. It's us as a nation as a whole. You know, when this group of kids and young men are incarcerated, that's not a help to our number one, just for people individually, but, you know, this is a detriment to our entire society. We need to do something about helping make a difference in these people's lives.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it becomes viral. I mean, when you get to the point where studies are being done on the rate of African-American males that are entering the penal system versus those entering into post-secondary institutions, I mean, topics like that shouldn't even come up. So, yeah, African-Americans are in peril, but at the same time, we, like you stated, we have several African-Americans that are doing great work. And then the younger generation who are to come, we have to create those spaces for those opportunities to take place. I mean, being quite frank, man, I'm from Flint, you know, Flint, Michigan, where, as you stated earlier, I mean, you're familiar with the area, but I mean, most dangerous city, top five. High poverty rate, high unemployment rate and things like that. But Flint has some phenomenal things going on. But if we don't elevate the young people to carry those things forward, then and as I stated at TEDx, we run the risk of getting caught in what I call the treadmill theory, running nowhere fast.
Before, we've only got about 5-6 minutes left in the interview, David. No, I just wanted to give you a heads up on where we were for time. In your view, what is it that we need to do to really make massive change? Where does it start? You know, for you, when you think about creating extraordinary change in whatever area you want to, where does it start?
It starts, in my opinion, getting rid of, and this is going to sound contrary to popular belief, but getting rid of the think outside the box mentality. Because when you say I'm going to think outside the box, you're telling yourself that a box exists in the first place. The box doesn't exist. It was never there. It isn't there. The world is your canvas. You can do whatever you need to do. Furthermore, adding on to that, we all need to find someone to be successful for. It's a simple formula. If everybody on the planet found at least one person to be successful for, then this world would be a better place. And change would come unconsciously. Change would start to be birthed in individuals, and our nation would take form and take off, and God would just move us to levels that we never imagined. I mean, Kevin Lyle says there's three types of people in life. There are people that make it happen. There are people that watch it happen. And there are people that things happen to, right? So you got people that make it happen, people that watch things happen, and people that things happen to. If we find someone to be successful for and get rid of the think outside the box mentality, we will be the individuals that make it happen. And we won't be the individuals that things happen to.
Love it. Maria, another question from you?
I just want to know what it is that motivates you to get up every morning to continue doing this work?
Knowing that somebody else isn't getting up every morning.
Pardon?
It's just a blessing that God, I said, knowing that somebody else isn't getting up every morning. So the blessing that God has given me to wake up and just carry out his will. So that's what makes me get up every morning and, you know, push me, knowing that the fact that somebody didn't get up. Somebody didn't get up. And that's just the harsh reality of it. So what can I do better today than I didn't do yesterday? I always ask the question, especially when I'm speaking, if there was going to be a book written on your life, what would the name of that book be? And a lot of individuals don't think about that because they don't ever think about being authors or anything like that. But even if you aren't thinking about being an author, each and every day of your life, you're writing the book to your life. So once you identify that and you subscribe to that belief, then you have to ask yourself the question, would anybody want to read this book that I'm writing on my life? So just knowing the fact that somebody isn't waking up every morning, that's what keeps me going.
Extraordinary interview, David. Thanks so much for joining us. And
thank
I'd
you.
Love for you to share where people can find out more about you, can track what you're doing, and also how they can get involved with Big Brothers, Big Sisters overall, but also in the Flint community.
Well, thank you for having me. To get involved in Big Brothers, Big Sisters, which I think is undoubtedly the greatest nonprofit in the country, visit www.bbbs.org. You can Google Big Brothers, Big Sisters. We're all across the country. So just visit bbbs.org. For more information on me, you can visit my blog at davidmcghee.wordpress.com, davidmcghee.wordpress.com. McGee'sManifesto.com. And the name of my blog is McGee's Manifesto.
McGee's Manifesto. And there's some great stuff in there. I just was checking it out the other day. I recommend everybody stop by and check it out. David, thanks so much for being with us, and I really want to have you on again. You know, I say this to a lot of our guests, but I really do mean it. I mean, we are blessed with amazing people every week, and I really appreciate you just taking the time to spend it with us.
Well, thank you, man. Thank you for the work that you're doing and moving the needle, as my mentor Sylvester Jones states in this life work. So thank you for making your life your mission to make a difference and following your passion, man. Thanks for all that you do.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it, and I will be getting a hold of you. Again, like I said, I want to continue this growing friendship. Thanks a lot.
Sounds good, man. Anytime.
It was
all
a
right.
pleasure.
Everybody.
All right. Likewise.
Maria, thank you, everybody. Thank you, David. That was David McGee, Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Flint. Great individual, great story, a lot of inspiration and ideas to share with us. And coming up right now in just a couple moments, we're going to be going with our second interview. And what's different about the second interview, first time ever on our show, is this is actually a pre-recorded interview. I did it yesterday with Peter Bregman. It was a really great interview. I highly recommend you take a listen to it. Just the one thing I want everybody to know is we won't be taking any questions out of the chat room, although I will probably be playing a little bit more in the chat room, and Maria too, while we listen to this interview. And I also want to let you all know too, it's something else that we're going to be instituting in the next couple weeks, are extraordinary moments. These are little 120-second, 2-minute, little bits that we're going to do, one or two, every show, and it's going to be from different experts on different fields, whether it's business, fitness, health, nutrition, inspiration, just little nuggets of wisdom that are 2 minutes long, just to inspire you, and we're going to be dropping those in the show from time to time. So if you want to participate in that, some of our listeners, please get a hold of me. And also we're going to be having a number of experts who will drop these little nuggets in on a regular basis. So I'm really excited to announce that edition coming soon. Before we jump into this interview with Peter Bregman, any comments, Maria?
Nothing. Just I'm excited to hear your interview that you had yesterday, and I really like David, so I can't wait to talk to him some more. It was really exciting. I want to know a little bit more about the Big Brothers, Big Sisters because of our Junior Ambassador Program. So, but that's a whole other topic for another week.
Awesome. Well, we're going to jump into Peter Bregman. And again, this is a great interview. I wish Maria could have been there for doing an interview with us too, but she had a little dental issue and wasn't able to join us, but it was really good. And we'll get going. And just to give you a little insight too on who this is, Peter Bregman, he writes a weekly column, How We Work, for the Harvard Business Review. He's a regular contributor at CNN. He speaks, writes, and consults about how to lead and how to live. He is CEO of Bregman Partners, Inc., a global management consulting firm where he advises CEOs and their leadership teams, and is the author of Point B, A Short Guide to Leading a Big Change. A really great interview, and I hope you all enjoy it just as much as I did. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
Tell me a little bit about what you do and your company. We talked a little bit about, mentioned you in the intro, kind of gave your bio, but, you know, really maybe take us back, because I thought it was really interesting. I've read a few of your columns on Harvard Business Review, which are outstanding. I'm going to do more, and a little bit from the intro of your book. But I'd really love to know just about how you got involved with speaking and leadership consulting, because what I saw was a really interesting story how you got into the business.
Yeah, I actually started my career leading, after college, leading expeditions for National Outdoor Leadership School, for Outward Bound expeditions. Outward Bound, some of them were actually in the city, in New York City, which was interesting, with corporate executives and urban youth. But with Knowles, it was 30-day expeditions, mountaineering, climbing, kayaking, living in the wilderness. and teaching leadership, both for Outward Bound and for Knowles teaching leadership. And since then, that was, you know, 20 some odd years ago. And I've always been fascinated with outdoor leadership and then indoor leadership, and, you know, what does it mean to be a leader, and how do we, you know, how do we influence other people? How do we bring them along with us? How do we keep them safe? How do we aspire to greater visions? Has always been an issue that I've been really fascinated with. So I started out with the expeditions, and then I started a company doing the same thing, and then I joined a consulting firm, and slowly over the years, my practice has been more with organizations than in the outdoors.
Well, you know, one of your recent articles, you talk about why not having a plan can be the best plan of all, and I've certainly followed this this road in my own career, but I really like how you talk about four things that success will favor for you. If you leverage your strengths, use your weaknesses, pursue your passions, and assert your differences. And definitely for you, doing the outdoor leadership was a way for you to begin to assert your differences.
Yeah, you know, blog has become, the article has become one cornerstone of the book that's actually coming out in about a year from now, September 2011, and that idea is the book is broken up into three portions: find your focus, master distraction, and get things done. And find your focus is really about, like, what is this year about, and those four things are really the cornerstone of that. You know, really understanding, you know, what you love, what you're great at, how you're different. Those things, if we spend our time in those places, we will be unbeatable. And so to understand that, you don't actually need this big strategy to say, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z over the next 2 years, and then I'm going to do, you know, follow that with something else in the next 3 years, to sort of understand what each step is. It's hard to do that because the world changes and we change and our relationships change. But to instead kind of know the principles by which you're living your life, to know where you want to focus your time so that you'll have both the most fun and the greatest return for the amount of energy that you put into it, then you can address each opportunity in the present moment as it occurs and make decisions based on that.
Well, you know, and in the process of growing, changing, your business developing, like I said, I one of the things I liked about that article is it really, you know, talked about at the time you really weren't quite sure how this was going to become a big profitable business, but things have grown for you. You've constantly reassessed, you've made changes, you've tweaked things, and recently we'll talk about maybe the new book shortly, but your first book, Plan B, maybe talk a little bit about how that came about.
Sure. Well, it's actually Point B. Point B, a short
Point B, sorry. Sorry about that.
No worries. No worries. No worries. I have a very good friend who keeps calling it Plan B. And maybe it is Plan B, actually, when you think about it. But it's, you know, for me, it was Point B. When I was working for large consulting firms, most of the ways in which we manage change in those firms were very, very similar, which was 90% of it was training programs and communication plans, meaning I'm going to try to convince you that this is the right thing to do through communication plans. I'm going to tell you, you know, why it's so important that we change, and then I'm going to train you so that I can increase your capability. So I'm increasing your awareness through my communication plans. I'm increasing your capability through my training. And the idea was, if people are able to do something and they're aware of the need to do it, then they'll do it. And I found that to be not true at all, because it was missing a cornerstone piece, which is do they own it? Do they want to do it? Do they feel like it's important for themselves because they feel like this change is important to them? Look, people don't resist change. There's a tremendous amount of energy that goes into fighting resistance to change, and people don't resist change. They resist being changed. So if I want to change you, you're going to resist me because nobody wants someone else to change them. But if you want to change yourself, you'll change happily and powerfully every time because there's nothing to resist. You want to do it. You will make it happen. If you want to do it, you will make it happen. So the question is, how do we create change in an organization that people actually want to do? And that's what the book is about. And the short answer is you give them the change. You let them make decisions around the change. You support them in making their own choices around the change. And you trust them enough to know that they will be able to do it properly. So traditionally, we try to make a change absolutely perfect before we present it to people so they have nothing to fight with. And my view is you should do the exact opposite. You should actually make it sloppy and give them lots to work with so that they can then change it and make it their own. And people, we need people to tell me, oh, that change is perfect, it's exactly what we need. I would rather them tell me it's not perfect at all. And by the way, I'll spend a lot less time making it imperfect than I would making it perfect. And I'd rather them tell me it's not perfect at all. And I would say, you're probably right. What's not perfect about it? What's not working? My will does not work. And let them tell me. And then I could say, well, what could you do to make it better? And they would tell me. And I would say, great, go for it. That would be fantastic. I'm more than happy for you to change the way I was going to approach this to make it work for you. And in so doing that, you know, certainly you need boundaries. You need to know what's not negotiable. You need to know what's important. But usually that's a very, very small fraction of what you would normally do when you're rolling out a change. So you figure out what's important, you hold on to that, and you let everyone else change everything else. And then the change sticks because they really own it, because people own what they develop and work on themselves.
Well, right now we're talking with Peter Bregman, and he's talking about his book, Point B, A Short Guide to Leading a Big Change. And I apologize again for butchering the name earlier. It was funny. That's what happens. You have all your notes on the computer, and you're on the wrong page. You go back and go, oh, I'm just going to grab that by memory, and that's what happens. But I love what you're saying there. And, in fact, I got a chance to read a few pages on Amazon. And I want to encourage everyone to get the book because I'm definitely going to buy this book after just, number one, seeing you at TEDx Flint and getting an opportunity to hear what you presented, but also really to, you know, read the first six pages of the book. I was into the book already. I'm like, okay, I want more pages. I got to buy the book. But you have a sticky there at the beginning that says, and you were just talking about this, there are no perfect designs. And that really struck me. I mean, you just talked about that. I'm not having a perfect method for people to change into, but making it a little sloppy. And I think we even do this personally for ourselves. We want to make a change or we're going to go do something different. Maybe we have a business we want to start or maybe we want to pursue some new hobby or whatever it is. And we go, we got to be perfect. You know, you have to come up with a perfect business plan. The conditions have to be perfect for everything that we do, and so we sit and wait and wait and wait because we're never going to find a perfect opportunity. So I love that. There are no perfect designs. That really, you know, spoke to me that at a certain point, yes, you have to put that groundwork in, but you got to move. It's not ever going
to
be.
It's much better to be productive than it is to be perfect. You're much better off producing adequate things than fantastic things that take you three times as long to get to.
Great piece of wisdom right there. So we're talking about initiating extraordinary change. And a lot of people who listen to the show, one thing we really, really focus on the show is inspiring people to do the things they're passionate about, to go after them, to make those changes in their lives that maybe are difficult, they're having a hard time getting through, or really they just need to be inspired to go forward with that change in their life. So what are some ideas that you can give for people on a personal level versus an organizational change, but personally how they can make those important shifts in their life?
So one of the things is to actually make sure it's the shift that you really want to make. A lot of times we make changes because other people want us to make those changes. And those, you know, and that could be anything from, you know, it's really my wife that wants me to lose weight instead of me, or you know, people are saying I need to have a higher education, but I'm not interested in it, or, you know, I want to start this business, you know, because someone's pushing me to, and, you know, if that's happening, then, or if you're trying to make a change that isn't in your sweet spot, that doesn't leverage your strengths, that doesn't reflect your weaknesses in a way that's supportive, meaning that allows, it doesn't allow for your weaknesses, you know, that you're not passionate about, that doesn't leverage your differences. If you're trying to do a kind of change that doesn't fit in those categories, then it's going to be a slog. If you're not passionate about it, it's going to be a slog. If it doesn't use your strengths, you're going to really have a hard time succeeding in it. If it, you know, if you have to be strong in your weaknesses in order to be successful in this change, then you probably won't succeed, right? Those are the first thing is make sure it's the right change, and it's your change. It's authentically your change. It's not someone else's change, but it's your change. So once you know that, then the question is, how do you move forward with it? How do you commit to it? And you know, it's very interesting to me around motivation. I wrote an article related to this. I went on this bike ride, and it was raining, and it was cold, and I had gotten the bike out of the basement of my apartment building and brought it outside, and I was standing under the awning, and someone, a friend of mine, ran past me and was like, oh, yeah, you chose a great day for a bike ride. And I almost, you know, like I listened to him, and I thought, oh, he's right. This is so dumb. I'm going to, like, run, you know. I sat underneath that awning for, like, 5 minutes trying to decide whether I really wanted to go out on this ride. And then when I went out on the ride, for the first 30 seconds, it was kind of cold and miserable. And then I got into the ride, and it was an absolutely fantastic ride. And I realized that we actually only need to be motivated to do something for, like, a minute at a time, right? That I didn't need to be I went on a one-hour bike ride. I didn't need to be motivated for an hour. I just needed to be motivated for the 30 seconds that it took me to get out of the awning. Once I was out of the awning, I was already committed. I was out there. I'm not going to stop the bike ride 20 minutes in saying, oh, I'm just not motivated anymore. You know, I was 20 minutes ago, but now I'm not. No, once I've committed to do it, once I've got momentum, once I've started moving, then I'm going to keep going. So, you know, in terms of being motivated, recognize the way I like to say it is, never quit a diet while you're reading the dessert menu. Right? That's just the wrong time, right? Quit the diet in the morning after you've had a great day of eating the day before, you're feeling good, and you decide, you know what, I don't need a diet anymore. But otherwise, work, you know, don't choose your weakest point to leave your commitments. Choose your strongest point to leave your commitments, and then you know you're leaving for the right time. So realize when you need to be motivated to make this change, whatever this change is, and push yourself through that moment of required motivation so that you can then get enough momentum to keep going. And finally, I would say, really authentically own the change that you're making and love what you're doing. Actually, in some ways, I sort of think those four categories of, you know, using your weaknesses, using your strengths, being different, and loving what you do is enough. And if you can shape change in such a way that those four things are true, you won't have any problem changing.
You know, I love that analogy, what you said, especially about getting motivated, because I recently completed my first triathlon, and really getting to the point of, you know, working out. I lost 60 pounds. I still got another 60, 70 pounds I want to go. But
no, that's great. Congratulations.
Thank you. But that effort, you know, it's going out and getting on the bike, you know, and going, you know, okay, I'm going to go ride. But once I get riding, it was great. Same thing, getting in the pool, you know, and starting to swim those laps. The first couple laps are like, man, this is hard. But then after a while, it got easy and it got fun. And you can just do it over and over again. So I love that. That's a great way to look at it, because I think a lot of times we look at things that we're going to do and we go, wow, this is going to be difficult. But you think about all the things that are going to come up that might be hard, and you don't really realize that once you get in the groove, once you get that first impulse, that first start, it's a lot easier sailing after that. I'd say it's going to be simple, but it's a lot easier after you get over that first hump.
Right.
And now, for people who are looking to make a bigger change, say they want to move their community, they want to change their business, they want to move an organization or something larger than just themselves, what skills can we carry over from making personal change into group or organizational community change?
First of all, I would say those four things really need to exist in order to make organizational change or community change too, which is, you know, especially the passion stuff, but not just that. You've got to be passionate about it. You've got to role model it. You've got to really live it. So it has to be a strength. It's got to be an area where it's okay to be weak in, you know, certain elements of it, and that doesn't affect the outcome. And you have to sort of be different than other people who are trying to do the same thing. So those four things still really need to exist. And then the question is, now this is the hard part. four things need to exist in order for the change to be successful. But the challenge is those four things will make you want to control the change, right? Because you're so passionate about it, you're so strong and talented in it, you know, you are going to really want it to go the way you want it to go, and you're going to feel like you're the best one to do it. And in some cases you are, but if you really want other people to change, you have to give the change over to them. You have to help them move along the process, but you have to really see it as a change that you, you know, give them to make their own. If they don't make that it their own, they won't be able to do it. So, for example, you have to get it half right. You can't get it 100% right. We talked about that in terms of perfection. You have to keep it incredibly simple so that people can integrate it. Right? You have to sort of speak in terms of stories so people understand your passion, and then they, too, can kind of write themselves into your story so that the story becomes theirs. Right? They can't. This is not a game of bullet points. This is a game of linking emotion to direction. And you have to really listen, and you have to kind of hear the stories of other people and then let their stories impact you and the direction of the change so that they really feel both respected and owners of the direction that it's moving in. And that's how you bring an entire organization over.
Awesome. And I can't believe we're 20 minutes into the interview already. Peter, real quickly, can you share with our listeners? I'm going to have another question for you after this, but where they can find out more about you and what you're doing and all the things that you're doing, really.
Sure. My personal website where my writing goes up is Peter Bregman, PeterBregman.com, and that's where you can subscribe. I write a weekly column for Harvard Business Review, and if you subscribe there, you could always – anytime I write something, or for example, this radio interview, I'll link it to there, and then send out an email once a week or so that lets people know kind of what new articles I've written or what's new that's out there. My company website, in terms of the work I do organizationally, is Bregman Partners, BregmanPartners.com. And you can really get to them. You can get to either one from each other. There's a link on either one. But either one of those is a good way of sort of keeping track of where I am and what I'm doing.
You got some great articles out there. I mean, I wish I could go into some more. One that was great today was that I read was on the basic concept of not doing anything, about meditating, about taking that time out to just be with yourself, which seems the exact opposite of so many of us who are in a hyper-competitive world trying to get everything done. But a great article, so I recommend everybody go there and check it out. So my last question for you right now is, can we get a little sneak peek about what your next book's about? What's coming next for you and where you're going next?
Sure. So a couple of things. And thank you for the compliments on my articles. The next book is coming out. It's actually written, but it's the publishing process takes about a year, and it's called 18 Minutes. It was based on an article, or the inspiration of it was an article I wrote called An 18-Minute Plan for Managing Your Day. And it's about what I said before, which is really, you know, figure out where you should be spending your year, where you should be spending then your day, and where you should be spending each moment. And so the book is broken up into three parts. Find your focus, get the right things done, and master distraction. Part of the problem I find with most time management books that I read or that I look at is they're always about getting everything done, you know, so that you can really get it all done. And I think that's a mistake. I think there's a lot of things you really want to not get done. And you want to be very intentional about choosing what you want to get done and what you don't want to get done so that you can be very, very powerful in your action and doesn't suck up all your time. And you're able to sort of master distraction, which means sometimes use it to your advantage and other times really sort of defeat it. And so it's really sort of about time and personal management. And then more recently, I sort of mentioned it a little bit in this talk around emotion. I think that, you know, even though there's a big movement and has been for years and years around emotional intelligence, I think it doesn't even scratch the surface of really engaging with our emotions in in both the workplace, in our relationships, and I think we're so scared of so many of our emotions, and that in fact by confronting that fear and by actually feeling things deeply, we could become incredibly powerful. And so I haven't written much about that, but I'm starting to because I've had a few experiences recently that really drives that point home for me.
You know, Peter, I can't agree with you more on both those subjects, and we have so much more to talk about. I'm looking forward to having you back. I hope to have you back next year. Maybe when 18 Minutes comes out, we can bring you back on the show because I'd love to have you back and explore some more of these subjects.
That's fantastic. I'd love that. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
All right. Thanks, Peter, and we appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And that was Peter Bregman of Bregman Partners. Apologize for that. And loved the interview. It was a great interview. I'm glad. I saw some of the comments in the chat room that everybody enjoyed that as well. And I really highly recommend his book, Point B, A Short Guide to Leading a Big Change. And we have just a couple minutes left in the show. And Maria, we have a great show coming up next week. Do you want to talk a little bit about it?
I'm really excited about it. It's actually a follow-up show from our April show with Patricia and Leandra, my foreign ambassador from Texas, and Patricia, who is the CEO of Crime Survivors. We have a meeting for her event in April, and we're also bringing in refocusing my direction and more on what I'm doing under four, and that's the Women of Distinction, which is our volunteer outreach. And since we're all going to be together, these are some incredible women that are going to be at the table, and we're going to call in and have a great show with some really talented women who are out there getting ready to change the world, and most of them are doing it already. So I'm really excited about it, Michael.
Well, it's going to be a great women's roundtable. We have a lot of really influential, smart, intelligent women that are going to be joining with us on this next show. And so all the women out there that want to set the world on fire, come out and join us next week. And also, men, here's some women you need to check out and get to know. Mm-hmm. So join us as well for that show. It's going to be great. Any you want to tell us really quickly about some of the other people who are going to be on?
We have Dawn, who is coming into her own right now, and she's just discovering her own life skills, so she's going to be here to share about that, and I would like to have her also on the show at a later time. And we also have the new reigning Miss Southern California, Sheena, and she won her title this weekend, so we're going to have her on, and she is also a domestic violence speaker and advocate, so she is really a very dear friend of mine. And we also have Magdalena, who she is into fitness, Michael, and wow, does she have a story, and I cannot wait for you to get to know who she is all about. And so again, these women are pretty incredible, all on their own right, and especially Leandra, what's happening with her and going on in Texas, and she's finally coming out and sharing her story. And do you remember her story?
Oh yeah, I remember her story. It's powerful.
Yeah, so we're going to make it known that her OBGYN did some things that he should not have done, and she is going to make a very loud statement. So, again, these are pretty incredible women, and I am just blessed to be able to sit at the table with them.
Yeah, not only talking, you know, difficult things they went through, but, you know, some really empowering. These are just women who are really empowered, who are making a difference in their lives, and I really encourage all of you to join us again next week. To really hear some empowering stories and that are definitely going to touch your heart and encourage you to go out there and make a difference. Maria, thanks again for being my co-host tonight. Thanks to all of our listeners, everyone who joined us in the chat room tonight. We're blessed to have such great listeners, a growing audience. Tell all your friends about us. Come out here every week every Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, here on blogtalkradio.com/anythingbutordinary. Thanks again for joining us. Go out there and be extraordinary.